There's an ad in one of the magazines just last week. I don't have a chance to read very many magazines, but this ad tells you how sugar gave you energy. If you watch a person sitting, you know, the person who sits around and has a couple of pounds of candy or so on, do they get energetic? I should say they don't. Anything. Sugar doesn't give you energy, not first, but second. It doesn't make you energetic. It can be used for calories and burn for energy, but you've got to have something else to get you off of the beam, you know, of your behind to start produce to going into the thing that you're spending energy for. Sugar doesn't give it to you. It has no vitamins, no minerals, no protein, no nothing except pure calories, which we don't need. And so the illness has been produced. And how much? Do you know that every day in America, almost 3,000 people die of heart disease? Every day, almost 1,000 people die of cancer. There are 250 million people who have infections every year, despite all of our knowledge about how to prevent infections. 4 billion or so have diabetes, tremendous number of borderline cases, almost over 55, the majority, I think 70% of borderline diabetes or something is estimated, in this Department of Agriculture and Bulletin. You can hunt it up for yourself, it's given out free on human nutrition. 22 million have allergies. Umpteen million are born with congenital defects and so on. Something like 80 million now are obese. And people say, well, they ate too much. That's not true. They ate too much. But the reason they ate too much is they're eating refined foods without the nutrients necessary to produce any energy. If you get these Department of Agriculture figures and add up the number of people, they all add up, believe it or not, not to our population of 210 to 220 million people, but they add up to 500 and some million. And you say, well, we don't have that many people. But we have people who have diabetes and heart disease and somebody who has allergies and low blood sugar and something else and something else. And so America is not very healthy.
Elaine Prostek with Barbara Patterson for the Woman's Hour. Today, we invite you to be healthy and to reap the rewards of nutrition with our guest, the controversial nutritionist, Adele Davis.
I just lectured last week at the University of New Mexico, where somebody was telling about an Indian school, and these little Indians were not healthy at all. They were trying to build them up, and they were taking milk, and the Indians liked their milk, but the kids, the adults usually can't drink it because they've stayed away from it so long they don't have enzymes to digest milk sugar anymore. But at any rate, the little kids liked it, and things were going along fine. And then someone, wasn't told who the someone was, but at any rate, put free Coke machines in the school for the injured children, to get them free anytime they wanted to. So they ate as many as 4 or 5 in one morning, and they didn't drink any more milk. And that's a good way to murder people.
Thank you.
At the University of Texas, Dr. Roger Williams gathered up, took samples of 10 different types of white bread, styrofoam type of bread, and ground it up and fed it to a bunch of animals, rats. And in 3 months, most of the rats were dead. But he, and this was a little masterpiece of fortification, then he put back what the millers had taken out so the flour would keep. A lot of people tell me nowadays, well, why do they throw the stuff away? And the answer is that white flour keeps forever and dark flour won't. One reason is the dark flour can support life. We used to have a lovely old lady in the days before health food stores had refrigeration. But this elderly woman, who was very well-meaning, belonged to an organization. I think she was the power to be in this organization called Foods for Life. And she also had a health food store. And people said she really practiced what she preached, because every time you bought in the store, you opened the package and the Foods for Life jumped out at you. But the reason, which shows she sold good things. We may not want them to jump, but nevertheless, anything that is really unrefined can support life, and the refined foods can't. So that when Dr. Williams added this, the nutrients that were taken out of the flour, then the animals became very healthy. He brought out that years ago, prisoners were punished by being kept on bread and water, but they could get healthy, keep healthy on bread and water. If anybody wanted to punish a prisoner on bread and water now, then you wouldn't have to have the Supreme Court worrying about whether capital punishment is all right, because they wouldn't have anybody to be worried about. They'd all die. Well, very much the same type of experiment was carried on at the University of Mississippi, which is unpublished at the moment. Dr. George Briggs, University of California, was telling me about this. And they gathered up a mixture of the 10 most advertised cereals, the 10 that were most advertised to children, the ones that really produced champions and things, 10 of them, and mixed those up and fed those to rats. And in 6 weeks, all their rats were dead. And the cereal people didn't like that much, and they said, well, look now, nobody eats cereal by itself. They eat it with fruit and milk. And the University of Mississippi people said, yes, that's true. They eat it with fruit and milk. So they mixed up some milk and some fruit in the proportion that you would have if you had a cereal with bananas on it or peaches or what have you. And since the cereal itself didn't any good, they mixed up some cardboard from the cereal boxes and put that in, and the animals were very healthy. They were fine.
Adele Davis studied at Purdue University, graduated from the University of California at Berkeley, and took postgraduate work at Columbia University and the University of California at Los Angeles before receiving her Master of Science degree in biochemistry from the University of Southern California Medical School. Throughout her career, she has worked with physicians, beginning in New York with dietetics training at Bellevue and Fordham Hospitals and at the Judson Health Clinic. Later in Oakland, California, and then in Los Angeles, she worked as a consultant nutritionist with physicians at the Alameda County Health Clinic and the William E. Branch Clinic in Hollywood, as well as seeing patients referred to her by specialists. After planning individual diets for more than 20,000 people suffering from almost every known disease, she gave up consulting work to devote her time to her family, writing, and lecturing. She is the author of 4 best-selling books, Let's Cook It Right, Let's Have Healthy Children, Let's Get Well, and Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit. Today's program includes excerpts from the lecture Adele Davis gave on the rewards of nutrition on May 1st at the University of Massachusetts, and the conversation I had with her the following day. Adele, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had scrambled eggs. I asked for boiled, but they don't make boiled eggs. They're too hard for your cafeteria. And I assume it was 2 eggs. I think it was 2 eggs and a glass of skim milk and half a grapefruit and a slice of toast, whole wheat buttered. That makes the 2 eggs were 12 grams of protein. The glass of skim milk was 8, so there's 20. And the slice of toast was 2 more, so there's 22 grams of protein plus carbohydrate. And that meets the qualification for a good breakfast as far as sustaining high blood sugar all morning.
Ah. Were those powdered eggs?
I hope not. No, I don't think so. I don't know.
They didn't taste like powdered eggs.
I don't know how powdered eggs. I've never tasted a powdered egg, to my knowledge.
They usually serve powdered eggs in these
cafeterias. How horrible. Yeah. Maybe they have. It tasted all right, actually. I noticed in the cafeteria they served an awful lot of what I call garbage foods. They served every kind of bakery sweet and donuts and Danish rolls and muffins and just junk, as though actually at least 80% of the stuff over there couldn't possibly build health. They do have milk, and they have fruit, and they have eggs that are available so that a person can get
a good diet there if they choose it carefully. Mm-hmm. But most of the people I saw were eating some sort of a donut, so on and so on. And quite a few of them were having hotcakes and that sort of thing with a lot of syrup. So your students aren't getting healthier there, and most of them with that type of stuff for breakfast are not doing good work.
What's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist?
Well, the study of dietetics is the study of what foods to put in the mouth. The study of nutrition is what happens to the foods after you swallow it.
And aren't most cafeteria people and people who work in schools dietitian people?
They're supposed to be dietitians, and unfortunately, dietitians are well trained. But from hospital, let's say hospital dietitians, have accomplished from standpoint of protecting national health. They have been very disappointing. I don't know of a single hospital in this United States where people come out and say, oh, the food was marvelous. I got much better by that food, mm-hmm. you know, and that sort of thing. I just don't know of that. And unfortunately, if professional ethics say that the nurse should follow the physician's orders, and they're exactly the same for the dietitians. So the dietitians aren't free, even though they've been very well trained in nutrition. They must work under physicians who've had no training in nutrition. And a physician may order a salt-free diet or a diabetic diet or this and that. But have no reference at all or no emphasis at all is put on building health, which is what nutrition is actually, the study of how to build health. And so you get the white flour and all the usual junk fed. And as a matter of fact, most of the universities are so dominated by endowments from the refined food people, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, that they teach refined food ethics, as it were. The Manual of Dietetics, which I saw recently with a girl who just graduated from dietetics and from our well-recognized state universities, had not changed one iota since I was a hospital dietitian at Bellevue Hospital in 1927. So help me, there was the same diets for diabetics, the same diets for ulcers. They hadn't changed. And yet people know, for instance, the diabetics often have to have legs amputated because of cholesterol, and that cholesterol deposits in the legs could be prevented if the diets were good. People have produced it by their inadequate diets that they've given diabetics all this year, and they still are. The same thing with ulcers. The one of the reasons this whole cholesterol thing broke is that Dr. Doc in Chicago, now in New York, studied the histories of some 35 young men who had stomach ulcers, and they were put on the diet, which is cream and milk, for stomach ulcers, so-called sippy diets, and within 2 or 3 months they dropped dead. One of them dropped dead in a telephone book trying to get a doctor during his first heart attack. Mm-hmm. And they had such high fat and such an inadequate diet. In order to keep the cholesterol down, you've got to have several B vitamins, oils, and so on. They aren't in these diets.
With all the recent information, though, on nutrition and all the numerous studies every single year, why are dietitians kept in the dark, and why are physicians not interested, seemingly, in nutrition?
The physician's course is terribly, terribly difficult. Physicians are terribly busy, and the medical students work themselves to death. And they are taught by physicians who, because they haven't learned any nutrition, think it's unimportant. So there's no medical school in this entire United States that teaches a good course in nutrition. They will have, for instance, I talked to a physician the other day. I was asked to talk to the Hollywood Academy of Medicine. It was just a dinner meeting, and I said to this man, why did you ask me? I thought they were asking me perhaps to rake me over the coals and argue with this and that and the other. And he said, it's because we need to know something about nutrition. That during his medical studies, the only time he ever heard the subject mentioned was in a course in pharmacology where they said, you may send your patient to the drugstore to get vitamin A, B, C, and so on. And said that was all he had. And I've had many other people. I get a great many letters now from physicians saying, where can I study more about nutrition? And it's because, for two reasons, because they're too busy and because they're trained by people who themselves are not trained in nutrition, you see.
And because nutrition is part of the home ec department as opposed to the medical school department?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Now, your question was a double one. What was the other?
And dietitians. Why are they kept in the dark?
Most of the schools. Now, some of the schools, and I can't mention names, but mm-hmm. not too far from here, are very heavily endowed by the soft drink people, the sugar refinery people, synthetic drink people, the people who are making, quote, fruit juices that never heard of a fruit juice, not even a smell, you know, that are just made out of a bunch of chemicals put together. And yet these people endow them, and professors who want to get money from them for more research and more research to get their own names mentioned have to play ball or else they don't get any more money. The only people, as far as I can see, on the university level, with a very few exceptions, are ones that are about to retire that don't want anything anyway. For instance, on my last book, Let's Get Well, I wanted some physician, of whom I know many, 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 to write a preface for it, because it was a book on getting well. It was a book on how to build health, but for people who are sick. And I called up a physician, and he said, I'm terribly sorry, Adele. I just can't, because the medical profession would look down on me. And I said, I've understood that they've threatened to kick you out of the medical association if you say any more about nutrition. He said, that is true. And said, it means more to me to stay with this was in Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, it was the late Francis Pottinger who has said that. I think it's quite all right to quote him. And I called another physician whom I'd also known a long time. And he said, of course I'd do it. And he was furious. And he's old enough that it didn't make any difference. That I don't care whether they kick me out or not. And he wrote the preface. Mm-hmm.
I know of a teacher who went to a person in the school cafeteria and said, well, these meals are terrible. They're all gravy and mashed potatoes and starch and starch and starch.
And don't forget instant mashed potatoes.
Instant mashed potatoes. Right, right. And the cafeteria lady said, well, they're well balanced.
Well, what do you mean by well balanced?
They have all the right minimum amounts of everything in each of the groups. What do you say to a person like that?
Well, I would say that sooner or later, these people who are saying those are well-balanced are on such a bad diet themselves, they'll die off something. We'll get a new generation made of you kids who know better than to believe the refined food people when they tell you that something devoid of 40 nutrients is going to build strong bodies if they add two or three little dabs of something, or that sugar produces energy, which when it causes blood sugar to drop and doesn't produces fatigue instead and craving for sweets and so on. You people, I think, are going to be smart enough that you're not going to be hoodwinked by all these things where you're being told things are not true.
You were mentioning the children who are being given pills because they're hyperactive.
Yeah.
They're also being drugged, in a sense, by the food they have to eat in school cafeterias.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but loads of them are going to school, I'm told, with a soft drink as a breakfast, a candy bar as a breakfast. These people, my feeling is that we are wasting in education millions upon millions of dollars on kids who can't possibly think because their blood sugar is so low, and when their blood sugar is low, the brain doesn't function. What we need to do is to start with kids with breakfast and educate the parents to give them nothing sweet at home. Give them a breakfast that's high protein with some unrefined carbohydrate, which can be as simple as the breakfast I had this morning. It doesn't have to be fancy. And then you're going to have a high blood sugar. You're going to have kids that can think. Or if we give them, the hyperactive kids, the four things that are terribly essential to relax nerve, which is calcium, magnesium, both of those two things, and vitamin D, which helps the two to be more readily absorbed and better used, and vitamin B6, those four nutrients, along with a good diet in general, but those four in outstanding amounts, most of these hyperactive kids, unless they're really brain damaged, will become as relaxed as a loose sack of cotton. Mm-hmm. You know, they actually, you can't believe the change, and that change often takes place in a week. And time and again, a kid who's doing very bad work that you may think is a little dumbbell becomes turns on and becomes a leading student. This little thing like giving a fourth teaspoon of Epsom salts twice a day. Now, how can we build health? People know how to build health. That's known. It's known enough that if you study nutrition, even fairly slightly, and stick to people who are trained. There's an awful lot of people writing books on nutrition who haven't had an hour's work in nutrition. And there's a lot of misinformation, But if you stick to people who've had some kind of university training, I think you'll find very much the same advice given you. In order to build health, we have to have 10 amino acids, which come from proteins, milk, egg, meat, cheese, soybeans, nuts, so on. 8 of these can never be made in the body. 2 more can't be made in the amount necessary during stress. So these 10 amino acids, all proteins, when they're eaten, break down into amino acids. And this is the stuff bodies are made of. This is what hair is made of. This is what fingernails are made of. Fingernails break, chances are your protein intake's low. It's what muscles are made of, and body tissues, and base of bones, everything is made of protein. Yet there are a great many people of every walk of life
regardless of how much money they have. They're on far too little protein a day. It has been worked out very carefully. If a woman should have roughly 55 to 60 grams of protein a day, if she's not under stress. I haven't met anybody not under stress. If you aren't, come up and introduce yourself afterwards, but it would be interesting to see. And a man should have about 80 grams of protein. And if you're really under stress, if you're working hard and studying and cramming and staying up late at night, you need more than that, maybe 100, 120, varies, grams a day. So you never know whether what kind of health you're toward if you don't know how to count protein grams. An egg is 6 grams. It'd be awfully hard to get 60. That'd be 10 eggs a day if you got it only from eggs. A quart of milk is 32 if it's whole milk and 35 if it's skim. So if you're getting a quart of milk a day, you're not going to be terribly low in protein. You're going to be, that's at least a half or a third of what you need. But almost every human being who's not a milk drinker is low in protein. That's in general is true. A half cup of cottage cheese will give you 20. A can of tuna, one of those small 3.5 ounce cans will give you about 20. A big serving of meat without bone or fat, such as liver, will give you around 20 grams, and so on. It's possible to get it, but you do need to know whether you're getting it or not, and what are the sources. Now, there's many, many kids that are vegetarian, some by conviction, some by religion, some by the pocketbook. They're broke. And it costs a good deal less to eat a vegetarian diet than it does to eat diets with milk and eggs and meat and cheese. And some of these kids are really in trouble. In the first place, there's one of the B vitamins called vitamin B12, which can be obtained only from animal foods. And the youngsters on strict microbiotic diets are having trouble because they aren't getting enough B12. I haven't read it yet, but I'm told that in the British medical journal, Lancet, is a report of the first time of a bunch of college kids dying from vitamin B12 deficiency because of vegetarian diets, strict vegetarian diets. Now, B12 is dirt cheap, and you can get it in 5, 10, 15, up to 50 microgram tablets. And if you're going to be on a strict vegetarian diet, for heaven's sakes, take B12 at least once a week, maybe like 50 micrograms once a week. B12 is absolutely essential for the working of the brain. For instance, there's an experiment with elderly people who had a whole bunch, lots of symptoms of senility. And these people were so confused that they couldn't stay home by themselves. They'd start out going in one direction, then forget where they were and go back another direction, that type of thing. While they lived alone, their diets were so terribly inadequate that they ate themselves right into this senility picture. But when they gave a battery of tests and gave different B vitamins, they found, and the doctors had found previous to that, that their B vitamins in the blood was very, very low. And every time they gave another B vitamin, they got better and better and better. And they particularly improved on B12 because it helped their memory so much and it helped clear out their confusion. And it brought out there are many families who are spending $500 or more, $500 or $600 or $700 a month, keeping grandmother or Aunt Nettie or what have you in a nursing home, who'd much prefer to be out if their diets were good enough to be out. And these B vitamins are one of the very things that they need so much. But that's equally true with a vegetarian. They need the B12. And the microbiotic diet particularly is very, very inadequate. It's possible to get enough amino acids if you mix many sources of vegetable protein together. If you mix soybeans, which are low in 3 amino acids, and mix them with corn and mix them with other beans and mix them with nuts and that sort of thing, chances are you'll be all right. But you have to have them all at the same meal. You have to have them mixed at the same meal. You can't have your soybeans at lunch and have cornbread at dinner and have something else at breakfast and expect the amino acids from one to hang around and wait till some more catch up, but they don't do it. There were a group of children down in Haiti who were dying of cachalot, which is the same thing that killed the babies in Biafra. And so a group of scientists up at MIT were trying to figure out how to get a possible protein to them that they could afford. They all had good gardens, which is more than most Americans do, even when they could have gardens. And they found that the best combination to give them was 1 part corn and 2 part beans, dry beans. And that could be ground up in a mortar and cooked as a cereal even. And it was well absorbed even by children, babies even. And that gave as good a health as egg yolk protein, which is one of our very, very best proteins. So it's possible, but it must be done carefully. Well, so much for the protein. It's something you must get. Milk, eggs, meat, cheese. or vegetable proteins, many of them at one meal. The protein is something you must have to maintain health. There's no question about it. It's been proved over and over and over again. So stay on whatever diet you want, but be sure you get enough protein, and it can be done.
You brought up a couple of really interesting points. I don't know which one to take first. Maybe we'll take them together. I think because nutrition, changing one's nutrition, brings about dramatic and fairly fast results.
Sometimes. Not always.
Okay.
When you want it most, it doesn't.
And that one can do it on one's own without undertaking anything fancy. Then why aren't more people undertaking it on their own?
Oh, thousands of people are do-it-yourself. All of my books are do-it-yourself things. And when people want to know exactly how much vitamin C and exactly this and exactly that, there's nothing that exact about nutrition. It's true that you could get an excess of vitamins A and D, and so you want to be careful of those, and that's the synthetic that causes most of the trouble. In building health, all in the world we're trying to do is to build health. People will read my books and say, well, I don't know where to start. I just don't know where to start. Well, they're sort of overwhelmed with material. It took me 40 years to learn, and they think they should know it when they read it once. But you simply start by getting rid of the donuts and the dumplings and the white flour stuff, and by increasing the milk and try to hunt up a good source of milk and good eggs. And it's so simple, really, you know. It's, as a friend that I've quoted saying, she says, Adele, your simplicity is so complicated. But it starts with simplicity, and the more you get into it now, that can be complicated.
Yeah, that's true. I think this book, Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit, is like a textbook, and I reread and reread and reread until it finally sinks in, I think. Yeah. Susan, what are some of the practical problems you've run into in trying to keep yourself, trying to give yourself proper nutrition?
I guess cost would be the biggest problem, because proteins just seem to cost more than carbohydrates and fats even.
Well, if you're getting your protein from meat, that's true. But the one of the things in cost, if you go through the market and eliminate the things that cannot possibly build health, you will no longer buy soft drinks, packaged mixes, white flour, white bread, most of the canned stuff, or a lot of the prepared things, the imitation fruit juices, the processed cheeses, the processed peanut butter that has hydrogen added to it and no oil on the top. You have saved so much money by not buying garbage that even the most expensive protein becomes cheap. Now, let's take it from the other way. Let's suppose you're not buying any garbage food at all, or junk food, and you do want to cut down, or you have a limited amount of money on protein, which is the main thing. Buy some milk. Hunt up a bakery supply place, perhaps, where they sell to bakeries or confection supplies. They use lots of powdered milk. We used to get it at 5 cents a pound. The health food store has to package it and repackage it, and if it gets the least bit wet, it gets spoiled. And a lot of reasons why it should be much more expensive, and I don't know what the price is now. But it's possible to find inexpensive, good, non-instant powdered milk. You need to get a blender. Then you could reconstruct milk and mix it up with partly whole milk. So maybe you're using 2/3 reconstructed powdered milk with water and 1/3 whole milk. That's possible. You can also get acquainted with soy grits and soy beans, all sorts of soybean products. Soy flour. You can make yourself hotcakes, for instance, at home, where you start with soy flour, you add an extra egg, you beat the egg separately because the bacon powder, carbon dioxide and bacon powder won't be held in soy flour. But make them rise because of the egg yolk folded in nicely. You can put in wheat germ and powdered milk and soy flour and stuff for hotcakes, oil, of course. You can get a hotcake that's higher in protein than steak. It'll have no bones and it'll have no fat to be discarded. And you'll have a wonderful thing. There are all sorts of things like that you can do. You can make yourself homemade cookies that are higher in protein than steak. If you look through my cookbook of things where you use soy flour and powdered milk and wheat germ and figure out the protein content of it, or even cereal with soy flour, powdered milk, wheat germ in it, like the granola type of cereal I mentioned last night where you make it yourself, you've got a very high. For instance, most of the cold cereals are run one from nothing almost to 1 or 2 grams per cup. Granola runs 18 to 20 grams per cup if it's made by my recipe containing a powder, a cup of non-instant powdered milk, and so on. So as long as you get into this, the more you can see that you don't have to use steak, and you don't have to have any kind of meat. I would use, on a limited budget, you can get ham hocks and to cook your beans in, your soybeans, for instance. You can get a ham skin, which they throw away. for the flavor. You can get the cheapest meat I've ever heard of in my life's a hog's head. They practically give it to you, and you have tremendous amounts of food, and you can make head cheese and what else, a scrapple, and it's delicious. Do you know that? You get cornmeal, and you make cornmeal mush with a lot of sage in it, and you put loads of meat in it, and then slice it off like that. Why, you're set forever. Why, you'll be so popular with all your friends.
Every cell in the body must have something called essential polyunsaturated fatty acids. All fat digests in digestion, broken down digestion, into fatty acids. And the ones that come from the fats which are solid at room temperature, like mutton fat and pork fat and beef fat, a little lesser degree chicken fat and butter and so on. The ones that are very, the solider they are, the more saturated they are. And these increase blood cholesterol. That's been pretty well known. Actually, they don't increase blood cholesterol. They increase the need for certain nutrients that prevent blood cholesterol from being high. But the ones that you have that are part of the body requirement are the unsaturated fatty acids that are found in oils. And they're found in almost all vegetable oils, except they're low in olive oil. Olive oil is the least value. If you are very fond of the taste of olive oil and you want olive oil in your salad, then mix it up with safflower oil or corn oil, soy oil, peanut oil, sunflower seed oil, or what have you. But everyone should have, every adult should have about a tablespoon of oil a day. Now, in order to build health, and this is very well known now, you have to have at least 40 substances, of which the 10 are amino acid, one unsaturated fatty acid from the oil, which would be supplied if you had a tablespoon of oil, which you get from mayonnaise, salad dressings of any kind, or tossed your salads, or you can use it in cooking, although it's better not to submit it to high heat at all. Preferably, just leave the oil raw. Preferably, the oils from the health food store. Most of the oils from the ordinary market have a BHA in them, a preservative that I think is going to have to go because there's too many experiments showing that it's a very dangerous thing. The prepared potatoes are solid with it, or they have a lot in it. I wouldn't say solid, but I would be afraid to use them. It's in a lot of stuff. But at any rate, get your oil on the diet. And that is part of the body, of the actual structure of every cell in the body. Now, one of the problems with oil is there's enough foods that have oil in them if we leave them alone. But instead of leaving them alone, the food processors put hydrogen in them so they never could get rancid. The thing that characterizes the unsaturated fatty acids is a double bond. And then the ones we need, poly means many, so it has several double bonds than the ones we need. And these bonds, if a fat is left at room temperature, the bonds break and oxygen combines here, which causes it to become rancid and distasteful. And the process is the food people who are trying to make money off of us and care nothing one hoot about our health, put hydrogen in there so that it can never have oxygen, it can't get rancid. They might say it's always fresh, in another phrase, you can always say it's always stale. Take your choice. I would say always stale as far as it does. And so on. So in making hydrogenated cooking and the solid cooking fats, oils are taken and hydrogen bubble through and gotten through. But the reason it's important is in the body, if this double bond is still there, as it should be in nature, then it's broken here and combines with protein, and that's the way body structure is built up, particularly the walls of the cell. Then this itself is broken down if vitamin E isn't there, which is something else. Now, the nutrition is the interrelationship of about 40 things. The 10 amino acids, the one unsaturated fatty acid, which can break into others. There are three that we have to have in the body. Some 15 vitamins, and we've been saying for a number of years 15 minerals, but actually the minerals are exploding into about 20 minerals or 30 or so on now. So much for that. These we need. To build health, you have to have adequate protein, adequate fat. Carbohydrate, which is starch and sugars, we get a tremendous amount of, and there's no dearth of carbohydrate in American diet. The main thing is that people get too much. Oh, before we leave fats, I wanted to say, processed cheeses. When you're buying cheese at the market, give processed cheese a wide berth. In processed cheeses, the old-fashioned good cheddar cheeses and Swiss cheeses and the really good old cheeses are solid because milk protein. So much milk protein was there that the cheese was solid. The processed cheese is solid only because the manufacturer bubbled hydrogen through it, and that makes it solid. Just as a solid cooking fat was an oil and became solid because hydrogen was there. Peanut butter on the market. Peanut butter used to be a marvelous thing. Most of the peanut butter now isn't worth taking home. unless you get natural peanut butter, which is the kind with oil on top. And the reason the peanut butter has been wrecked is the manufacturer, again, wanting to sell it to kids, and they advertise it on radio and television and stuff. They put in a lot of sugar and a lot of hydrogenated fat, or they bubble hydrogen through, so that your peanut butter has lost the value of the fat that we need. And you can get your own peanut butter. You can get peanuts and put them in a blender and make your own. Or in California now, we have in some markets, not all of them by any means, you have great tables of plain peanuts that you can buy. And over here is a great grinder, and you make peanut butter that's lumpy or whatever they call it, chunk peanut butter. Here, over here, you get smooth peanut butter. So you make your own. Now, if there is such a thing, some of the little hippie stores have those. Find out where they are. They're on the right track. A lot of you kids are really doing a great job, I think, and I'm very delighted. Very delighted. To go on, I just barely can touch on a few of the vitamins and minerals. Vitamin A is in colored fruits and vegetables. There's no dearth of that, but there are a great many people aren't having it. We get vitamin A from cream and butter and eggs and cheese. More in the summer than in the winter. The yellower the color, the more vitamin A, and so on. But there's so many people are staying away from those. Doctors have told them to because of cholesterol. Unfortunately, the physicians are not well trained in nutrition. People sometimes say to me, but my enemy, shall we say, she isn't accepted by the medical association. I've had tremendous friends among the medics and have worked with them for years. What they mean, why should I be? Their study is entirely on disease. My studies have been entirely on health. And so they tell you to stay away from foods that contain cholesterol, and that's not the problem at all. The problem is keeping cholesterol in very small particles so it can go through the walls of the blood vessel to be utilized, which it does if the diet's good. The high blood cholesterol in America is a terrific problem, and it's a problem only because the refined food people are selling us stuff and talking us into eating things, lying about the value of their things, and getting us to eat things that have the nutrients lost from them. Now, one of the big problems of vitamin A is not only people stay away from some of the most best sources of it. The nitrates in the fertilizer, of course, is in the soil, and soil solution is in the food. And the nitrates can destroy, in the blood of the person, destroy vitamin A, carotene, which changes into vitamin A, and also vitamin E. And there are many surveys made fairly recently which indicate that vitamin A is very deficient in America. In the great survey done under Senator McGovern in 68 and 69, reported first in 69, they found vitamin A deficiency so severe that children were threatened with blindness, as they are in India. Great deal of blindness from vitamin A deficiency. But that was right here in America. I think if we want our very best health, we've got to have more people willing to get out and get gardens of their own, to make compost heaps, and to use, at least get some squashes and tomatoes and whatnot in the flower beds, and start raising vegetables. In our community, we have big yards, usually most of them. I have any number of friends who go to the gyms and they do this sort of thing, you know, and they trot and they take all sorts of exercises. Well, what they should be doing is out spading in their backyard, for heaven's sakes, and grow something that the kids can get healthy on. And besides, it's great fun, you know. It's awfully hard to give God any credit when something comes up and flourishes and you put the seed in the ground, you know. It's a great, great hobby. I would urge every human being who has a little plot of ground to get busy and read Ruth Stout's book, A Green Thumb Without an Aching Back, and a few other books like that, and get turned on to herbs so you can have good flavors and really have fun with gardening. But we're always going to have problems as long as we use commercial fertilizers. Another problem that's come up, work's been done now at Harvard and also University of Nebraska, is when nitrates from commercial fertilizers get in our blood, which they do, they can be changed through a series of things to something called nitrosamines, which are cancer-forming. And the people who are doing research on it feel strongly enough that they haven't really said too much about the commercial production of our food. They like to tell you that we'd all starve to death if people tried to grow organic foods. And it may be true now because our soils are much, much more worn out than anybody realizes. But the reason that the Middle West was settled, one was because the soils in Virginia and the Carolinas and so on
were became worn out after 3 or 4 years of growing cotton and tobacco. But people know how to build up soils, and every community in this whole United States should have the sewage sludge not put in the rivers and the lakes and the streams, but composted so that it could go on our soil and we could become a healthy nation. You can have tremendous production if the soil is built up, but it takes some years to do it. So there's so much for vitamin A. People often think that anything the health food store, anything that comes that builds health, tastes like the very devil. And it's just the opposite. If you get foods grown on good soil without poison sprays, I swear I can tell the difference by one taste. I can tell you whether a food is, I'm probably wrong, but I think I can tell you whether a food is organically grown or not, because it tastes so sweet and so good. For instance, I was just came up from Florida, and we had wonderful strawberries that had been picked 4 days before, and my hostess said, oh, we'll have to throw these out. There wasn't one berry that had been the least bit rotted. They were just a little sweeter and a little drier. She just put them in the refrigerator so they'd dried out, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were absolutely delicious, and they were certainly organically grown. Now, the one grown with commercial fertilizer would have been rotted long before that.
Of course, when we get into the organic foods, then we get into really high prices, at least around here.
When you get into organic foods, what you should be getting into is your own backyard, with the peas coming up very quickly and your rhubarb already up and so on.
And elderly people and people on Social Security, not only are their incomes restricted, but also going out and planting a garden is something that they feasibly couldn't do.
As a matter of fact, it doesn't make any difference how elderly they are. If they are on to good gardening, they can go out and plant a garden at any age as long as they can cripple around. And the reason is that in order to plant the garden, you don't spade anymore. You cover your soil to be a garden with thick mulch of leaves, perhaps, and the little worms come and they do all your gardening for you, and they eat up the thing, and they aerate your soil, and your soil, if it's good soil at all, if you lifted out the rocks, and your pioneer grandfathers made the rock walls out of the rocks, so on. And you can get wonderful soil. I have had around fruit trees, I have 9 fruit trees on an ordinary little old lot, and I had ivy at almost a foot thick, heavy, heavy, heavy ivy, that's the way it grows in Southern California. And that would be an awful job to do that. So mm-hmm. I put compost on top of the ivy, and then I put a lot of leaves on top of the ivy. Then I put wet newspapers, thick, thick, thick wet newspapers all over that. And then I covered it up with rocks so you couldn't see the newspapers, so they wouldn't be an eyesore. They wouldn't go away. Keep it wet. And first thing you know, all the ivy's died. It doesn't get enough air. The bugs have eaten it all. And I have wonderful soils you just pick up like that. Now, that's the way. And you mulch. Then you put your mulch aside. You drop your things in. And that's known as green thumb without an aching back. Now, your elderly person is usually ill because they've been living alone. They know nothing about nutrition. And a lot of times the families, totally aside from Social Security or Medicare, have to spend hundreds of dollars a month taking care of these people. Whereas if they spend a few dollars on a few vitamin concentrates, particularly the B vitamins and vitamin C, the people could be so much more alert. It's been brought out recently. A man said that if a person's mind is a good mind throughout life, it does not degenerate with age. It does not. I suppose there'd be such a thing as atherosclerosis, but an awful lot of this plain malnutrition, because the people didn't have good dentures and they didn't have a way to get a market, but mainly because they're not trained in nutrition. Uh-huh. I've known elderly people that are up in the 90s that are so amazingly active, you can't help. You just can't believe it. And they go racing around and see all their shut-in friends are sick and try to talk them into having yeast and wheat germ and things. The B vitamins are a varied group of vitamins, of which many have not been made synthetically. The ones that have been made synthetically appear to be as good as the ones that are occur naturally. The best sources by far are yeast and liver and wheat germ, but for the family who's had whole grain breads and cereals all their lives, they would get some every day, enough that they'd probably be all right. Also, bacteria in the intestinal tract make B vitamins. For instance, a baby who is nursed gets a great many B vitamins produced by the bacteria in the intestinal tract. They never have B vitamin deficiencies because mother's milk's very high in sugar. Milk sugar, which is used bacteria, valuable bacteria, live on the intestinal tract. It isn't used as sugar in the body. A lot of it isn't. And the bacteria break down milk sugar and lactic acid, which cause the intestinal tract to be very free from bacteria, very free from disease-producing bacteria, but also produce B vitamins. There are a number of B vitamins that I want to just stress a moment. One is called pantothenic acid. When volunteers have stayed on a diet lacking pantothenic acid,
The adrenals, the glands that produce cortisone right above the kidneys, cannot produce their hormones without it. And without cortisone and without certain glands there, they get very low resistance to disease, particularly to allergies. And so these volunteers, on the lack of this diet, developed stuffy noses and mucus, the whole picture of, you can name it whatever you want to, some people say allergies, somebody else says respiratory infections. But they had it from the very first week they lacked this vitamin to the last. And allergies can be produced by injecting into an animal's blood pollens or dandruffs or undigested food or partially undigested food. Often raw egg white is used because it dissolves very easily in water and can be injected in. And if the animal is on an adequate diet, high in this B vitamin pantothenic acid, it will not develop allergies. It'll have no problem at all. But if the animal is low in pantothenic acid, it can die of anaphylactic shock or die of allergy, if you want to say that. Now, this vitamin is destroyed by heat. And physicians who have not trained in nutrition, unfortunately, have the power to tell or do tell women how to feed their babies. And a great many of them are not urged at all to nurse their babies. And they're fed preferred formulas, which are mostly skim milk nowadays, and cocoa butter, which is about as saturated a fat as anyone can get, plus oil. And so and it's all treated by heat. It's canned or something or other. And then the baby's stuffed with canned baby food that's also treated by heat. And none of them contain a bit of pantothenic acid. So the doctors are very successful in producing allergies in about 66% of all babies that are not nursed. You don't get allergies in a baby that's nursed, never. Until after it's weaned, then you get them. But allergies are pretty well a pantothenic acid deficiency. It's absolutely essential not only produce allergies, to prevent allergies, but to prevent infections. And it's a very little known vitamin. A lot of people will take B vitamin complexes or concentrates of supplements and think they're getting value for them, think they're getting something valuable, but they're losing this vitamin mostly. But this is a terribly important. You know how many diseases are treated with cortisone? And when they're treated with cortisone, it always means that your own renals are not producing the cortisone you need. So that it's a very, very important vitamin. As a matter of fact, the whole personality of a person changes when they lack this vitamin. They are usually the outgoing person pulls into himself and becomes unfriendly and doesn't want to be bothered, and they can get a skin rash type of thing. All sorts of symptoms occur, but particularly they get susceptible to infections and so on. There's another B vitamin named B6, which is rarely in your B vitamin tablets, and if it is, it's in very small amounts. Nobody knows the amount given. If a person's already deficient, they need maybe 100 milligrams or more. A lot of the B tablets have 1 milligram or less. People have in many places carried out experiments where they lack vitamin B6. They develop nausea. That's one of the early things that may come and go. If the deficiency becomes very severe, they may get a lot of vomiting, but that's quite severe. B6 has been used for the nausea of pregnancy. If a person has enough B6, they don't get the nausea of pregnancy at all. Volunteers lacking B6 get migraine headaches the first week. They develop a rash, usually around the genitalia, the men volunteers around the scrotum and so on, the women up the vagina and the like. Most of them had bleeding hemorrhoids in experiments deficient in B6. Another thing they do, if the deficiency goes on for any length of time, it can be a mild deficiency, not completely, they will start gaining water weight. Well, one of the things which has become a problem, which is a twofold problem, nutrition is the study of what happens in the body, but it's the interrelationship of all the nutrients together. And in order to collect urine and to prevent having waterlogged tissues, you have to have protein. But protein can't be built without B6. You have to have the protein called albumin, which is produced by the liver. And that attracts the waste material and the moisture in from all over the body and takes it to the kidney. And if you don't have enough protein, or you don't have enough B6 to make the protein, people will have puffy hands, and oftentimes the rings can't be slipped off and on, or ankles will swell, or eyes will swell at night. Waterlogged. The doctors give them diuretics. Of the 40 nutrients we must have every day, some 35 of them dissolve very easily in water, or are lost if diuretics are given. One way to be sure you have a baby less healthy than it should have is take diuretics during pregnancy. And many obstetricians recommend them, and it's very, very sad indeed, which is really more than less B6 deficiency. I mentioned particularly the need for B6 increases tremendously during pregnancy. The need for B6 increases tremendously by the girls on the pill, because the pill imitates pregnancy. So anyone on the pill, it's very common. I've made diets out with the dozens in the days when I had time to make them out, where girls would write in and they would have migraine headaches, a rash around the genitalia, water weight and taking diuretics. They'd have this whole thing, and the whole bunch of them would be on the pill, you know, whereas that, so that you do have a lot of problem there. And it's one of the very important B vitamins. There's two other B vitamins I want to mention called choline and inositol. Now, inositol is more widespread than choline. And choline is a B vitamin, which is, these two are absolutely essential to keep the blood cholesterol normal. Blood cholesterol, and everybody should know his own cholesterol, should not be over 80 milligrams per cent. And in many parts of the world where people are on diets of only natural food, the milligrams of cholesterol are around 120, which is probably normal. That's what babies are born with, 120 milligrams per cent, healthy babies, of cholesterol. And when the cholesterol gets high, it may be 300 or 400 or 500, even 1,000 and a half cup of blood, that's milligrams, and a half cup of blood, this cholesterol is going to be deposited in the walls of the blood vessels. It can deposit in the blood vessels of the leg of the person who's active, the postman, or the person who has to stand all the time and whose diet's inadequate. Until the leg vessels are completely plugged up with cholesterol. But there are a lot of people, thousands and millions really, who have enough cholesterol in their legs that they're uncomfortable if they sit. Many of these people have cramps in their legs at night. Or it'll get in the walls of the blood vessels in the eye and vision dims, or in the ear and the hearing is hurt. There are tribes of the Maasai tribes in Kenya are said to take as many as 20 quarts of milk a day when their blood cholesterol's run around 120. So that it isn't the milk at all, it's the lack of nutrients. But you need one of these B vitamins that I started talking about, or the two, choline and inositol, which come from yeast and liver, and they particularly are available from lecithin, which you can get at a health food store. And lecithin have these two vitamins in it, and the body produces, liver produces lecithin every day, which, if it has, if you have in the diet oil, all the B vitamins, but choline and inositol, B6 are the three you have to have for this, and magnesium. Those five nutrients, if you have every day, it seems to be those five. That are absent, there may be others that are essential, but these are known to be essential. Before the body produces something called phospholipids or lecithin, the liver produces it every day to keep it, which homogenizes the cholesterol in tiny little particles so that it doesn't increase in the blood. So much for that. You need to get whole grain breads and cereals if you eat any breads at all. Read the labels on your breads. Don't get white bread. There's all of these nutrients are milled out of white bread, even though it's unbleached. Yeast, liver, and so on. Vitamin C, people always ask me in a group like this, is Linus Pauling right? Is it safe to take large amounts of vitamin C? It is indeed. The University of Texas now, they're doing work in which they're giving 25 grams, that's 25,000 milligrams, of vitamin C to a little guinea pig that must weigh a pound. And they're trying to see if they can produce toxic effects, and they haven't been able to at all. So having done that for several months, and the guinea pigs are thriving, and they're doing fine, they're losing a fair amount of vitamin C because they don't need anything like that, of course, but it's lost in the urine right away. They've tried them on all sorts of drugs which are highly toxic, and they find that the guinea pigs with this tremendous amount of vitamin C are not bothered with toxicity of drugs, and the ones with less vitamin C are.
They're telling me that you have to go catch a plane, so I just want to stick in one quick question. Why not multiple vitamins if you can take individual vitamin supplements?
It would be fine if you had, in the first place, if you had a real multiple vitamin that contained the amount of everything, it would be about the size of a golf ball. Multiple vitamins, as a rule, are made simply to make money rather than to fulfill needs, and they think if you had too many things in them, why they might... I don't know. But at any rate, they have just a few B vitamins. I've seen multiples with 100 milligrams of B1. They should have the same amount of B1, B2, B6. I've seen them with 100 milligrams of B1 and less than 1 milligram of B6.
And many of them have no beta, no choline, no inositol, no a lot of B vitamins that should be there. Maybe it's possible to get them. I've never seen an all-in-one that was, I considered, really good. Mm-hmm. Then there's iron is often put in a multiple will contain iron, and iron destroys vitamin E if it's unless it's food. Food iron never does. Mm-hmm. But maybe they're better than none. I don't know. But I have never seen one that I considered a good one. I think you can save money by getting some plain vitamin C and getting your B vitamins from yeast and wheat germ and your A and D from a cod liver oil concentrate and a vitamin E capsule. And if you did nothing, then take a vitamin A and D capsule and some E and then food. Magnesium doesn't cost anything. A fourth teaspoon of Epsom salts once or twice a day will do that, as well as clear up anybody's constipation. Calcium should come from milk and cheese.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I've enjoyed being here.
It was really very exciting for me to be able to talk to Adele Davis. I had been into Adele Davis before she appeared at the university, and I had been trying meticulously to cut out all sorts of junk from my diet. By the time I had got a chance to talk to her, I had made myself obnoxious to everybody in this area, telling them what they shouldn't be eating. I'm glad to report, though, that as of now, I have successfully eliminated potatoes and soft drinks. I'm working on candy and potato chips. I just hope you enjoyed this program as much as I have.
As another point of interest, we received quite a few letters and telephone calls in response to Barbara's anecdote 2 weeks ago on our NPR program. Barbara was talking about the problems which she had as a married woman in trying to get credit in her own name. And since we're trying to put some material together on this issue, we urge you to write and share your experiences about credit departments with the rest of our listening community. Also, we'd like you to share any other experiences that you've had with the rest of our radio community. That's what this program is all about. So write to the Woman's Hour, WFCR, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01002. Your comments and reactions to the program are always welcome. This is Elaine Prostack for Barbara Patterson and the Woman's Hour. See you next week.